Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefrey, and this is episode number 308. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. Really appreciate those of you that like, share, comment. It just helps us continue to highlight the great people that we have in our profession. Also want to thank our sponsor, Train Heroic, for bringing this episode to you for free. I only partner with people that I believe in, both the people and the product. And Train Heroic, they have a fantastic product, but they're even better people. So if you're in the market, reach out to them. If you're not, just the next time you see them at a conference, let them know how much you appreciate them being a part of the show. Also want to make sure you guys know about our new app, Play Pro. Best way to describe it is it's Netflix for strength coaches. It's just an incredible resource and something that I think everybody should have. So go check that out at play.pro. This week I'm joined by a good buddy of mine, a guy that's been in the profession as long as I have. For the great friendship when I was down in Tampa, but Donovan Tantis is the head strength coach for the Toronto Blue Jays. All around great guy, married to a fantastic woman, and has a fantastic family as well. And just appreciate you coming on the show, man.
Happy to be here, Ron. Happy to be part of this.
And we've been trying to get you on the show for a while. It's taken 308 stinking episodes, but now you're finally ready to go. I love it.
I'm a late adopter, and wanted you to grow this thing so it was international and had 100 million downloads and all that stuff, and then I figured now it's time to get on.
Got to prove myself.
Yeah.
Man, you've been with the Blue Jays for quite a majority of your career, but, you know, which stop? I mean, you've done it all. You've done almost every stop along the way in professional baseball. Which stop did you learn the most or had the most impact on you as a coach?
Yeah, no, I've had the privilege of doing pretty much every level in professional baseball, and the first stop was with the Cleveland Indians, and that was profound. It was an eye opener for me. It was something I had no idea what was in store for me, but I learned so much just by watching and listening and absorbing as much as I possibly could. The next stop was my first full time position with the Blue Jays as a minor league coordinator. And that was in 2001. And it was like the first stop times two, where I had no clue what I was getting myself into. Shortly after that, I met you and walked into a program that was basically non-existent. Went from established program with Cleveland to a program with the Blue Jays that was nothing in place at all. So it was a blank slate. It was an opportunity for me to build something or be part of building something and work at. And almost 20 years later, looking back, it's amazing to see how far we've come, and to know that I had a part of that, a small part of that.
Absolutely, I want to dig into that quite a bit here in a minute. But before we do, I always ask the question: What's one of the biggest mistakes you've made, and how you've learned from it in that career of yours?
Yeah, I think my biggest mistake was getting into professional sports as young as I did. It was a steep learning curve, no question, and I took that on head speed, and I tried to learn as much as I possibly could about what I needed to do to provide for our athletes the best that I possibly could, and as you know, the pro sport world operates basically 12 months a year. It seems like it's 24 months.
Yeah, right.
Times, honestly, doesn't it? 24 hours a day, but. Just being in that environment for a very, very long time, I didn't get outside of my own sport enough. I didn't get outside of my own area of discipline. And I think I became a little bit sterile because of it. You know, there's so many other world-class organizations out there, other sports professionals across the world who are doing so much incredible things. And just kind of keeping my head within my own sport too long, without really looking outside of this and what I can do and what I can bring, not necessarily going out and bringing everything new in that I could possibly do, but at least learning from strategies and techniques and technologies and everything that's out there and trying to find a way, does it fit, does it not, but just learning, just continue to learn instead of repeating every year, you know?
So important. Something I'm even learning at this point in my career is, you know, I spent pretty much my entire career, except for pro baseball when I first got in, for a half a year, in football, in my passion, you know, and that was great. And I think that's what a lot of strength coaches do, right? They have their sport that they're passionate about, and they go down that rabbit hole. But when you pigeonhole yourself in that one kind of mentality, and you're not working with a variety of sports, seen it done a variety of ways, it does stall your growth, I think. And now having to go and work with a cricket team in Australia, you know, I mean, like, I've never even seen cricket before, let alone mm-hmm. know how to work with that sport. But it makes you go back through that needs analysis and learn, you know, and dust off a lot of those old practices that you did when you first got in. And I tell you, it's super important.
Yeah. It's funny you said cricket too. We did a little bit of work with Australia cricket recently, and just learning from them. And, you know, we're not trying to train baseball players like cricket players at all, but we're learning from their challenges and what they're doing well and what they're trying to get better at. There's a lot of similarities.
Yeah. Well, I think that's with all sport. You know, there's so many different ways. And one thing that, you know, we might as well touch on now is, I mean, like you, you know, taking a global approach is so important these days. I mean, it's not just, it used to be when we got, I mean, 25 years ago, when we got into this thing, the thought of being able to communicate with a strength coach in Australia or New Zealand or the UK, I mean, you just didn't, like, you could barely get out of the state. Mm-hmm. Now it's a Zoom call, it's a phone call, you know, yep. and you're able to learn so much and see it done a little bit different way. And I know you guys at the Blue Jays, you've not only done that organizationally where you brought in, you know, people from the out, you know, from outside the country even, but you're regularly seeking those people out to learn from. Talk a little bit about how you guys have challenged yourself to grow both as an organization and how you've structured your department in a way that supports that.
Yeah, no, we've, our org has grown exponentially the last 3+ years now. And that's part of the vision of our new president and CEO, Mark Shapiro, and who's established a high performance department here, similar to what you'd see in a lot of the European organizations over there. And it was his vision, his desire to bring that to the U.S. and implement that, but not just do it, but do it the right way. And so we've been searching high and low for the highest quality of people and that we can bring in to head departments or to assist. Or to grow, come in at entry level and grow, and we've expanded our staff, both strength conditioning, nutrition, mental performance, analytics, coaching, across the board, from top to bottom, major league to Dominican, and now it's a matter of just bringing it all together on a regular basis, and really watching the magic happen, and that's our mission now.
I think, you know, it's obviously trending in that direction, right? That the high performance model wasn't something that was talked about even 10 years ago, but it's very commonplace in the Olympic sport countries, right? Mm-hmm. So when it kind of got popular, you know, some of the NBA teams, some of the NFL teams would go and grab European or Australian and bring them in and try to implement a high performance model. And a lot of them failed for a variety of reasons, but mostly because of the understanding of the game, right? You guys have done a great job of integrating that into the, you know, the ebb and flow of the game, the personalities, the culture of professional baseball. What were some of the things that you guys noticed about those high performance models that weren't working in pro sport that you tried to address with what you guys are doing there?
Yeah, I don't know that we have a whole lot of awareness of what's working and what isn't elsewhere. But I know internally what we've had the biggest success with is just a common desire for everyone to work together, for everyone to be, to create the best result, culture and environment for our players. And putting the player first has been probably the biggest impact across the board in us being able to deliver a culture for the players to succeed in. And we want to build that from the ground up, but having that mission handed to us from our president CEO and making that the clear ultimate goal and mission, really made it clear all the way down through the system that this is where we're going. This is what we want to do. If this is not part of your future, then that's totally fine. You know, there are other opportunities for you elsewhere. And if this is something you want to be part of and watch grow, then you're in the right place. And that's where we found our success.
I think it's so important. I think that's number one thing that I've picked up, you know, as a noticeable difference between, you know, other sports, other countries and the United States is the civility. I don't know if that's even a word, civility of how they, you know, they're civil with their athletes, how they, you know, it's a mutualism that exists. And so much of what we do is authoritative kind of, you know, leadership that, you know, for whatever reason, it hasn't been that so much in the other sport, other countries. And I think if you can get on that level where it is, it's very much we're all in this together. It's not you versus me type of mindset. Then there's so much that can be accomplished. And we're not even tapping into a fraction of what the human body and psyche is capable of.
Yeah, there's no question that what they've been doing in Europe is completely different, not completely, but quite a bit different than what we've been doing here. So there's a lot of newness here in the U.S. in terms of that. At some point, that'll become less new and more familiar to the players, and they'll probably be less concerned with a lot of it. But, you know, rightfully so, when they're handed new ideas and new technologies and new thoughts, they're going to question it, as they should, as athletes should. It's up to us to deliver the clear why and answer behind why we're doing and what we're doing. And if we can't deliver that, then that's on us. You know what I mean? So,
100% agree. You know, I think that it's so important for us to recognize that it's not generalization. There's great scientific strength coaches in the United States, and there's great art of coaching strength coaches in other countries. But, you know, we need to be all coming this direction a little bit where it's commonplace. You said, you spent 20 plus years there. You know, I mean, that's like unheard of in, you know, professional sport or strength and conditioning. Talk a little bit tactically about some things that you think that you've done through the years to make it so that you've – what president are you on? What GM are you on right now?
You know, I think this is my fourth president, fifth or sixth GM, and the list goes on and on as far as that goes.
Yeah, but I mean, you've been able to survive that. That's not an easy task. You know, what are some things tactically that you would recommend coaches do, or that you see coaches not doing when there's those job changes?
Yeah, honestly, fortunate to be here as long as I have been, and wouldn't want to be anywhere else. I felt like I've started over several times within my own organization, and that's in a good way. You know, spent time initially as a minor league coordinator, was promoted quickly to the major leagues, and spent some time up there. You know, in that time, realized that family was a little bit more important to me than where I was headed in that career. So took a step down position to be minor league coordinator again, and was never happier. Was able to deliver to our minor league players and develop that minor league program the way I wanted to, and still have the quality of life at home that was most important to me. And then, honestly, since our new department has been founded within the 4 years, I feel like I've completely started over again. This time as head of strength and conditioning, something that I had not planned on or intended or wasn't even on my radar, but was something that the organization saw as a good fit for me So far, I've thoroughly enjoyed it, and I would say, tactically, it's just continuing to be open to where the next road goes. You know, don't paint the road so clear that it has to be between these lines. It's you know, you don't know when you're going to create the next position for yourself. When I was in high school, I didn't even know there was such a thing as a strength coach. We didn't have one, and now I've been one for 20 years. And so I am certain that there are positions that do not exist right now that that the next generation of coaches coming up are going to be in for 20 years. So just having that open mindset to find the things that really drive you and make you happy and where you want to be and where you can be a difference maker. Because to your point, if you're not a scientific strength coach, you're more of an art of a coaching guy, then that's where you need to find your niche, and you need to spend time and develop that and be the difference maker in that. You know, don't force yourself into a scientific role if that's not who you are.
Great. Yeah. I'm working on an article right now that, you know, you have a job, you have a career, and you have a vocation, right? Your job is, you know, when you load trucks or you work at Walmart or whatever, to be able to do whatever you want to do, right? When you're an intern, you're personal training so that you can be a strength coach. Your career is a strength coach, but that's determined by other people. You don't have a whole lot of control over that. But your vocation is, you know, wanting to inspire people and help them become the best version of themselves. And when you keep your vocation the front and center, you can inspire people and you can, you know, help people become the best version of themselves doing anything. Mm-hmm. People can't take that from you. And I think that's super important whenever whenever you go through those types of tumultuous job changes or, you know, transitions within the organization. And I know that about you. You've been the same guy through and through in terms of, you know, your vocation is to better the organization any way you can. And your ego is not so big that it's ever going to get riled up if somebody comes in and pisses in your Cheerios, you know?
No, I eat it right up, man. I eat it right up.
You guys are, you know, we talked a little bit organizationally. You guys are also making some changes within your facilities and the structure. I mean, from what I've walked into 20 years ago, or whatever, I even interviewed for the Blue Jays at one point. You know, I mean, it's night and day compared to that facility. Now, even improving it beyond that. Talk a little bit about, you know, as coaches, like we didn't go to we never took an architecture class. We never took a course on how to put together an elite training performance center. What are some of the mistakes you've made? What are some things you wish you would have known, and advice that you have for the younger coaches that haven't yet done that?
Well, honestly, I had some help early on and off in this. I remember reaching out to you really at the beginning when we knew we were going to start to build one of these. I wanted to reach out to people like you who have been through it first, you know, before I even got wheels on the ground. And so before we even got started, I had a ton of great advice from you and others in the industry. But similar to Presidents, this is my third facility now that we've been part of. But going into it, man, just kind of eyes wide open, trying to be as open-minded as possible I can and not just pigeonhole myself to just the weight room. You know, how does the weight room fit into the entire building? How does it fit into the structure outside? How does everything flow? We spend an agonizing amount of time on flow charts of when the player arrives, where do they go, where are the next steps, because it was extremely important to us that wasn't a disruption, because it is about the player, man. It's about the player showing up. You know, so I, like everybody else in the world, asked for a gigantic square rectangle, 20,000 square feet. Ultimately, they ended up giving me, you know, with no poles in the middle, of course, and ultimately they ended up giving me a room the shape of a home plate with poles right down the middle of it, you know, and part of that odd shape also gave me additional spaces. So again, not digging your heels in and not being resistant where you're scratching and clawing for every square foot of your own room at the cost of other departments, because the success of the other departments is going to help you. You know, it's going to make my room more efficient. It's going to make what we do better. So, me not giving way to an extra 1,000 square feet or something like that so that, you know, our nutrition department can set up a world-class fueling station, or me digging in our heels so we don't have appropriate meeting rooms for mental performance, or we're putting in a movement studio for our movement and mobility classes. The ability to be flexible and just not be so rigid in my demands allowed me to get what we ultimately are going to consider to be a world-class facility, not just a weight room. It's going to be insanely, insanely incredible. And it'll be a showpiece, no question, but we see it most as a difference maker for our player development. And, And our president has gone on record saying over and over that every day we're not in this building is a day lost. So that's how important he sees it. That's how much he values it. And that's how we're pushing. And we're looking at every angle, every corner, every square inch of this building to make sure that nothing's been overlooked.
Yeah, I mean, I think the two big takeaways there is knowledge is power, right? You know, the more that you reach out to people that have done that and learn from their mistakes, because everybody makes them, hopefully the fewer that you make. And then I think the holistic approach and recognizing that, you know, there might be $4 million. And in that $4 million, you got to do nutrition and mobility, and you got to have locker rooms, and you got to have, you know, got to have all these things. And you might be able to advocate for your area, but at the expense of maybe something else. And I think that's, you know, so many times we put on the meathead strength coach hat, we go in there, we only think about the four walls of the weight room, and it's not, it's much, much more than that. You know, you talked earlier about, you know, in your mistake kind of, you know, getting kind of stale or stagnant, you know, and your desire to grow in this profession. And I would say probably, what, maybe 10 years ago, you really made a conscious switch to, man, I'm going to get outside of these of pro baseball. I'm going to explore out. I'm going to ask a million questions, research all these different technologies and everything like crazy. What's your process now? Like, how do you go about making sure that you stay to where your current 20 plus years in this profession?
Yeah. Honestly, in pro sports, the blessing and the curse is a lot of this stuff comes to you as far as technologies. You don't have to go looking too hard. It's a lot of it's is delivered right on a plate to you. So it becomes more of a working through what truly is useful and beneficial to your players. You know, is there a question you're trying to answer, and is this tool a potential answer that you're looking for? So, you know, if we're looking at workload for athletes, for their work before the game or during the game, what are our options? You know, what type of in-game wearables are there? You know, is it scalable across the whole organization, or is this only a major league level type thing? And then, you know, as far as our workload goes before the game, again, what are our options there? What are we trying to learn? What are we trying to find out? And then who's that information going to go to? Is it intended only for us? Is it a return to play? Is it a medical decision, or is this something that we want to share with the coaches and deliver to the program itself on a regular basis? Is this something we want to look at weekly, monthly, annually, daily? Is it easy enough to use that you can do it with a pen and a paper, you know, or is it scalable enough to have cloud based that everyone in the org can view it? Is that okay? You know, do we need player access, to need players to sign off on it, you know, and are we violating any kind of MLB rules and regulations here? Who's seeing the data? Anyone outside the org? Is that even possible? So, as far as the process go, it's long, it's involved, it's detailed. But before anything gets that far, before anything gets on a player, we've worked through it from many, many different angles and many different ways.
Yeah, I mean, expand on that a little bit from, I mean, take technology out of it and how you're growing just in, you know, I mean, you and I have been in this long enough to where we've seen tier system kind of come and go. You know, we've seen triphasic. We've seen all these kind of things be added. You know, when you see something added that people are talking about, like, what's your filtering system, or how do you go about kind of challenging yourself to be able to speak intelligently about that, whether or not you do it or you add it, or you add it or you.
Yeah. Well, honestly, you try to find some people in the field who are actually doing it, and you know, not just the company, or not just the, you know, if it's velocity based type stuff, of course all the companies are going to tell you that their product is the best, you know, but you want to go to practitioners who are actually using it, you know, and talk to them. How are they using it? Like, why do they feel like it's beneficial? And a lot of that. And then after that, you got to test it. You got to try to break it. You got to try to use it, put it on athletes. You got to use it in your system. Might work with one guy, but is it scalable to have when you have a room full of 20 guys? And, you know, are you still getting the same benefits as a one-off? And then budget wise, you know, is it even a fit budget wise? You know, is it, does it make sense to be able to use it times 10? And then we have 7 minor league teams plus a major league team plus a Dominican team. You know, is this something we can have in all 9 of our facilities? Or is this something that only belongs in one in a rehab only scenario? My biggest bang for my buck is reaching out to actual practicing professionals who are actually using it day in, day out, hands on, and how are they using it, and what is their takeaway?
So important, and I want to make sure everybody hears that. And I think the number one thing that I've done, that Donovan does, is going directly to the innovators. You know, when Tier System came out, I went directly to Joe Ken. When you know, Triphasic came out, I went directly to Cal. And then, you know, I would go beyond when, you know, Cal would say what his influences were. And then, like you said, I mean, getting in and trying to break it, I think that's so important is there's got to be a filtering system of you going through and vetting it out completely before you ever let it touch one of your most precious commodity, which is your athletes, whether or not you're working with the $20 million pitcher or you're working with, you know, Slappy, you know, third string second baseman, you know, at what Dunedin High School, right? You know, you got to make sure that, I mean, that's what your priority is, to make sure you do no harm, and you have every obligation to work through that process throughout.
And it's different going to Cal and talking to him about Triphasic than it is to go into somebody else who's actually trying to use Cal's Triphasic too, you know, because Cal knows what he's doing. But go to somebody else who tried to learn it and tried to imply it on their own is like yourself trying to do it. You know what I mean? Of course, Cal can do it. He knows it inside out.
Yeah, that's such a great point. Such a great point. As I talked at the beginning, I mean, you're a family man first. You know, I mean, so much so that at one point in your career, at the pinnacle of your career, you said, you know what, this is what is not most important to me. I'm going to step down so I can spend more time with my wife and my son and be in one place and all those types of things. Talk a little bit about work-life balance. And we all know that that doesn't exist in this profession, but how do you go about trying to make that as close to that 50-50 as you can?
It's honestly, it's always at the front. It's before any decision is made. It's how does it affect home? And that's just a self-awareness that I went through as part of my life and my career, where I realized that when I'm at home with my family and I'm able to share those times with them, I'm a more productive, better professional, not the other way around. When I'm a better professional, I'm better home. It's the opposite. And so, I knew that being in a position where I could help athletes, had to be synergistic with me being at home and taking care of my family and being with them as much as I possibly could. And so that's always been at the front of every decision I'm making. And not just saying it, but living it, you know, because a lot of people say that it's important. And I've made mistakes and I've made, you know, poor decisions along the way too, that have affected us. But it's just learning as much as you can from that. And making sure that going forward, everything you do is living those words, not just saying them.
No question. I 100% agree. And I always say that if your home team's not right, then whatever team you're working with has no chance, you know? I think I just really respect that. I think that, again, the takeaway message for me is, you know, I'm sure that wasn't an easy decision to say, okay, I want to go from head strength coach to minor league coordinator. From a professionalism standpoint, right? And in the moment, but what does it do? It turns around, and because you're being the person that you're meant to be, you're coming in fired up each day because home life's right. The organization turns around and rewards you and puts you back as the head strength coach, and all you can have all those things. You can be both. I think coaches need to hear you can be both a great coach and a great family person. And, you know, so many times it's kind of an either or, and I don't think that that's the truth.
Yeah. It's funny you said that it's not an easy decision, but it was probably honestly one of the easiest decisions I've ever made. And most people wouldn't believe it. And after I made the decision, I think everybody looked at me like I was crazy, but it was, there were no regrets and none going forward.
Absolutely. I think that's, you know, similar when you realize that you're not, that Strength and Conditioning isn't about chasing the logo. Like once I realized it's not about the logo, it was awesome. Like I agree 100%. Well, man, we end the show with some resources here. Give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
I've gotten it over and over my entire career, and it's not one resounding thing. Honestly, I got a piece of advice the other day, literally yesterday, in an email that I'm going to tell you today because that's how fresh I like to keep it. But it was take what you do seriously, but don't take yourself too seriously. And that's from Dave Hadfield, one of our consultants that works with us, spent some time in New Zealand and with the All Blacks. And I saw that and I was like, that is amazing. And like I said, I've been in this game for a really, really long time, and something like that comes across your desk, you're like, that's incredible. That hit home. That made a lot of sense to me. And that's how I honestly look back at my career and I'm like, that's how I've tried to live my career, taking my job seriously, but not taking myself too seriously.
100%. Give us a book, app, and website recommendation.
Books, yeah. Number one, Ego is the Enemy, Ryan Holiday. Absolutely, absolutely love that book. Hammered home to me, made so much sense, and couldn't be better. No question, a shout out to Dana Santis, my wife, her book, Practical Solutions to Back Pain Relief. Saw that thing come together. Was part of watching that whole thing, and it's amazing. I don't think there's a human being on the face of the earth who hasn't dealt with back pain. So that was a great one. Literally anything that Malcolm Gladwell's written, I would recommend. Literally anything. I think I'd read a grocery list if he wrote it. I love your books, Ron, CEO Strength Coach, Weight Room Wisdom. The stuff you're putting out is just so incredibly valuable to these young coaches to see the bigger picture of being a strength coach.
For sure.
Not just what they assume to be the day to day. So, an app, I'm going to go with Audible just because I spend a lot of time on the road driving to and from work. It's the same drive every single day. I can do it blindfolded. So audiobooks and podcasts, save my time. And that's where it's incredible with these podcasts. Like growing up as a young strength coach, there was no podcast. There were none of this stuff. And you and I know that if you wanted to go meet another professional, you need to drive there and see them and sit there and talk to them. And we did that from time to time. But honestly, with just your podcast alone, meeting coaches from all across the world and hearing them, getting to know them, it's been amazing. I mean, what an incredible resource that all these young coaches have that we didn't have growing up.
Great. Any websites?
Yeah, website. Cressy puts out tons of great stuff. Sturdy Shoulder Program is solid. And then another shout out to Dana, mobilitymaker.com. If anything mobility, she's got that niche cornered, no question. And new online cert coming out too to help help some of those young aspiring mobility movement coaches for breathing and things like that too. So
yeah, it's awesome. I'm excited for that. Well, man, like I said at the beginning of the show, I mean, just through the years, you know, just great friends and you know, I've just always been humbled by just how elite you are in your coaching career. But then how, like you said, I mean, the book that you recommended, Ego is the Enemy. I mean, no ego, give you the shirt off your back, willing to help anybody and everybody. And, you've just always approached everything that you've done like that. And it's been great to see from afar and proud to call you a friend and man, just super excited for you and family.
I appreciate it, Ron. I really appreciate you having me on and look forward to all the future episodes you have coming out too.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest as well as our sponsors for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at rmckeefrey. on Facebook and YouTube at @Ron.McKeefery. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.